Good evening, my name is Michael. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm just a finite speck in the infinite creation of the Lord, my higher power that has kept me sober for 10 plus years. I'm nothing without God. I can't do this without God. I get to be here. I get to do this. I get to make amends. I get to sit here. You know, you ever hear people say, you are exactly where you're supposed to be? Right? You are exactly where you're supposed to be. I'm supposed to be dead. I'm supposed to be in jail. And I'm only here by grace. A gift that was given to me that I don't deserve. Right? You ever pay a credit card bill? You get to the date that you're due to pay the credit card bill, and they say, that's okay, you got an extra 7 days grace period, right? There's nothing that we had done to deserve that extra time to make that payment, to come clean, to get things straightened out. But they give us a grace period. Ladies and gentlemen, that's how I feel about being here today. Right? I'm here by a gift that in many respects I have not deserved by the way that I live my life. I mentioned in previous talks that I was given a gift to see a very big and thorough and long fourth column. God had granted me to see all of my faults early off in recovery, and every single time that I've done inventory, God bless you, every time I've done inventory, I still maintain this gift where I just see all of these areas, God bless you, where I'm at fault. All of these areas where I've been selfish, dishonest, frightened, and all of the different things that I've done. It floods me, and in early recovery, it was flooding me before I got to the inventory. When I got the inventory, it all came out. And it's something that I'm proud of. Except for when I get to these steps. 8 and 9. Now, all of a sudden, I wish that God had given me a little bit of a break. Not letting me see so much. Because my resentment list is long. My fear list is long. And my 8-step list is even longer. And and then the things that accumulate that I need to make reparations for on that list is pretty pretty big. It's a lot. And so it's probably going to be a better 9-step speaker here sometime in the future. It's probably going to be a better 8-step speaker sometime here in the future. I'm sure you've heard them better in the past. This is the step that I've made lots of mistakes with. These steps here. Not proud of it. I could probably speak for a couple of hours on what not to do following my path with steps 8 and 9. And I hope that maybe God can use that experience in some way to be of help to somebody. Maybe even to encourage me to be better in some way. This is me. I don't know if anybody feels that way, but I sponsor a few people. I've, you know, heard this from them. What does God want from me? Right? What does God want me to do? What's my vocation? Right? What does God want from me? What do I want to be when I grow up? Right? You know, I come in here at 36 years old, and I don't know what God wants from me. I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I can tell you a couple answers of what I was working with, you know, certain type of career that I wanted. But all, through much of my recovery, it's like, you know, one of the fears that keeps showing up is, you know, what does God want me to be? And I don't want to do what He doesn't want me to do. I don't want to do what He doesn't want me to be. You know, does he want me to be a priest? Does he want me to be an actor? Does he want me to be a father? Does he want me to be married? Does he want me to be single? Does he want me to be with this girl? Does he want me to be with that girl? You know, do I take this job? Do I take this job? What do you want? And it's always this, you know, what do you want from me? What do you want from me? What do you want me to do? And this fear about this stuff. But you know, I've been given the answer. And it's on page 77. And this is my answer. This is the answer for me. But on page 77, God has told me that my real purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and to the people about us. That's it. Keep it simple, stupid. Right? And when I sit with that truth, and when I sit with that reality, I do have purpose in my life. I do have meaning for myself. I do have a vocation. I do have a calling. And if it happens to be a checker at ShopRite, or if it happens to be a priest or minister or rabbi, a father or a single man or an uncle or a son or whatever it is, my vocation is clear to me now. Thank you, God. It takes me 10 years to figure it out. It takes me 10 years to hear it over and over again or read it in different ways. But my calling is to self-sacrifice for others. And what a greater calling to have in life than to be an agent of this power. What a greater calling in life than to help bring somebody else to this power, to this solution, to God as they understand. I'm gifted and I'm blessed. And when I say I'm just a finite speck, I am just a small little speck of dirt in the history of time. I am nothing more than that, and I am completely powerless over everything, even 8 and 9, maybe even more so in particular based upon my experience. I need God for this too. I need God to be here, and I need God for this. I need God for this talk, and I'm just going to say a little prayer. Dear God, please help us to have the best possible human relations with any human being that we have ever known, currently know, or ever will know in the future. We ask you that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what our personal consequences may be. Please, dear God, show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Thank you, God, for the strength to go out to the people that we have caused harm and clear up the wreckage of our past. Amen. Those are 9-step prayers, some 8-step prayers that I've worked with throughout the time. I say that 9-step prayer all the time, or at least every morning, or I try to. You know, dear God, please help me to do the right thing, no matter what my personal consequences may be. Sponsor said to me, wrong thing. God may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. He made it very clear to me, Michael, you are not others. You are not others. We're not sitting here talking about what personal harm it may cause you. Right, we're not here to talk about, oh, well, you may do jail, or you may have to go bankrupt, or you may have to move to a smaller house, or you may have to take a different job, or you may have to lose your job, or you may have to have a divorce, or any of these other things. This is, there's an example that I have on that maybe it'll come up later on, but it's one thing that was made clear to me right off the bat. You know, you are not others. So, dear God, all the more so, dear God, please help me to do the right thing no matter what my personal consequences may be. And as long as I'm clear on what my purpose and my vocation is, my real purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about us, that's all that matters. I'm on a mission from God. Let's just do this thing, whatever it is. And like I said, my real purpose is self-sacrifice for others. sacrifice is not a big new term. Sacrifice is a word that's been around for a long time. Sacrifice comes along with a lot of ancient customs and traditions and spiritual beliefs. I understand that that word has a lot of personal understanding, a lot of personal relationship. It may be jarring and scary based upon the way and the information that word has come to you, and I understand that. I've had to come to terms with it myself. But the truth is that there are many customs that deal with sacrifice. Our Jewish brothers and sisters, they have a Day of Atonement where they have to make things right with God, you know, with their brother and sister. All sorts of different religions have had to sacrifice goats, lambs, turtle doves, pigeons, right, in order to make right their defects, their wrongs, their harms against God, their harms against to themselves, their harms towards one another, right? People have been offering sacrifices in order to make things right throughout time and history. Based upon their understanding of God, based upon their relationship with God, God as they understand Him, for whatever that those are. It's just not a new term, but it's truth about human history. In fact, some of our Christian brothers and sisters are coming upon a time where they're going to be asked to make sacrifices for God. Sacrifices to remind themselves exactly that they how much that they need God to for everything in their lives, right? It's a season, God bless you, season coming up. They call it 40 days and 40 nights where people go into this time of sacrifice. Yeah? This is my life. This is my life. We may get to that in step 12. There's a lot of step 12 promises, and all of them have to do about personal sacrifice. It even says in the ninth step on page something, 83, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development. And I remember a sponsor saying to me, you know, it was like my second or third sponsor, right, one of these times around. He'd ask me about these promises that you hear in the ninth step. Nine-step promises, not first-step promises, not fifth-step promises, not six- and seven-step promises, ninth-step promises. Not the promises, the ninth-step promises, right? There's promises all the way through this deal. We've talked about some of them. You know, there's a lot that I've missed. I recommend you go checking it out and having an experience and get some of those promises, you know, happening in your life yourself. Sponsor asked me one point in time, you know, how are you with this, you know? Is that feeling of uselessness and self-pity disappearing? Or, you know, have you started to lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in your fellows? I'm like, yeah, I'm starting to do that. Self-sleeping, sick in a way? Yeah. Fear of people, of economic insecurity leave you? Well, you know, sometimes, a bit of the time, but it's around, you know. He's like, he's heard my inventory. He knows the story. He's heard my 11-step stuff. He hears my 10-step stuff. He knows, you know. Well, he says, well, let me ask you a question. Page 83, have you been painstaking about this phase of our development? Again, sacrifice, personal sacrifice. And the thing is I get a 4th-step and a 5th-step experience, and in my personal experience, it was mind-blowing, fabulous. Tremendous stuff going on through that experience, like totally feeling changed and relieved and all these other things. Now, all of a sudden, you know, I'm making, say, financial amends off of the top, not out of the depths of my pocket, not out of my savings. Well, whose money is it anyhow, right? Or, well, you know, I've got to go to the ball game. I got tickets for the ball game on Monday night, so I can't really call out and reach out to people to make amends. So, you know, whatever. Well, that's not being painstaking, right? I have to be painstaking about this process. There has to be self-sacrifice here, and in many respects, you know, humility. coming forth while I try to move forward on this path in 8 and 9 all the way through. So it calls upon a reading that, you know, I've worked a little bit with about 8 and 9. And kind of goes like this. So then, if you bring your gift to the... it's about the sacrifice. It's about this idea of sacrifice. Goats, lambs, calves, turtle doves. Right? So then, if you bring your gift to the altar, and if you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift at the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Right? Saying, you got to make things right first with man before you want to talk about recompense with me. Get on good terms again with your opponent while you are still on the road with him. Still on the road with him. So, I can tell you, still on the road with him, to me, that means while you're here, on this planet, on this lifetime, having this experience. Right? Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I know what it's like to not make amends to somebody and then they die. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to have the opportunity to make the amends in sobriety, Joe Spiritual, Big Shot Sponsor, all this other stuff, and not make an amends. Then, oh, guess what? So-and-so died. Ugh. It's a horrible place to be. You know, my God, as I understand him, has asked me to make this right here. Now, there's still a way to make that amends. There's still a way to do that, and I can tell you my experience with it. Right? But, like I said, I've made many mistakes, and I can go on and on about them. So why do I do this? Right? What does our book tell us about why we do this? Right? How we do it? They give great directions on this stuff. I'm not going to get to all of them, for sure. Eight is an hour in itself, to be honest with you. How you track these people down, how you prepare for these things, right? I mean, you know, I'll tell you one of my 8-step mistakes. Guy who started this group was sponsoring me for a little while. He heard my first inventory and he heard my second inventory. His instructions were this: go through your inventory and just highlight the harms that you caused. I said, well, I made a list of harms caused. Yeah, okay. Just highlight all the harms you caused. Right? Okay. So I'm highlighting the harms caused. And winds up happening is like I start to see defects of character connected to the harm to this particular person. I'm like, wait a second, defect of character. I see it how it relates to my mother, and I see how I brought this in with, say, the girl and this person at work. And so then I started to like see all of this stuff, like how like defects were showing up in these areas of life, but this defect in this area of life, and I'm making like these charts, right? With like the defect, you know, who, what time of year, what was going on, what was the fear underneath it, all this other stuff, and like if you came into my parents' room, first of all, it was a wreck in the first place because, you know, 30 plus years of alcoholism, I'm moving back in with my parents, I'm filled with depression at some point in time in the deal, and here I am like, you know, I've got these papers all over the place with this mastermind plan about, like, you know, the defects and where, and I'm going to figure this thing out and whatever. And I showed up right here in this parking lot after the meeting, and he says, Michael, I think you need to find a new sponsor. I'm like, wait, dude, no. You know, like, I was writing this guy inventory. I was doing nightly review stuff. I mean, I was thorough about all of this stuff. He's like, no, man. He's like, I asked you to go through the list and just highlight your harms caused. Yeah, but I'm seeing this stuff. It's not what I asked you to do. Right? Mm-hmm. You're going to need to go find someone else who you're going to willing to take direction from. Mm-hmm. You know, what a blow to my ego. Needed it. Thank you, God. Mm-hmm. Thank you, God, for that guy. Right? Showed me that, you know, here in the 8th step, been through the process a second time, and I'm still nuts, I'm still self-centered, I'm still trying to play by my own rules. Like I said, I can talk for an hour just on the 8th step. That's a mistake that I made. Sponsor told me to do something, I should have just done that, right? But I needed to do that to maybe let you know. You can do it if you want, but it may not work out. It may work out just the way it did for me. Sponsorless in AA after so many years. It says here, page 76, remember it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Right? I have to be reminded of that a lot, especially with 8 and 9. But with anything else too, really. You probably should be somebody reminding me every day just about that. That and what my real purpose is. So why do we do this? Right? Page 77... what does it say? Oh, simply tell them that we will never get over our drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. Okay? So, the book is telling me we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. It's very clear. It's one really good reason why I should do this. You know, if alcohol is still my master by the time I get to page 77, then these are the words that, you know, this is the sound that needs to be made. The sound of willingness. Hi, my name is Michael Finley. I'm in a 12-step recovery program for victory over alcoholism and a whole bunch of other stuff. Part of the process is for me to make a list of people of whom I've caused harm. It has come quite apparent to me that you have made my list. I'd like to spend some time discussing these things with you. Mm-hmm. Right? I know your sponsor may have another way of going about it with you. This is what I've been working with for the past few years, and I've had better success with this approach than some of the others. But there is a sound of willingness, because you would ask me all day long, are you willing to make amends? Yes, I do. I'm totally ready. Then where's the sound? Right, because I'm only willing until I'm doing this. It's only willing until I'm picking up the phone and trying to make an appointment. Right? Is alcohol at this point still my master? If not, I probably still have a first step problem. I may be holding some stuff back on 4 and 5, or I'm not praying enough for willingness to make this particular amend or whatever the heck it is. Another reason why we should do this. Is somewhere else. Page 78. Okay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go. For we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. Not just creditors. You know, am I afraid to face my girlfriend's father? You know, to be straight like a man for the things that I had done to his daughter and the way that I treated him, the way I treated his grandson, the way I treated his grandson in front of him and in front of a whole bunch of people. If I live in fear of those things, I am liable to drink. And I looked up liable. It's a word that, first of all, it's like a legal term, right? But secondly, it has to deal with negative consequences, right? Liability, you know, drinking again. Liability, loss of relations, you know. Liability, misery, pain, fear. The only way for me to get out of that is to pick up a drink. Or to do these principles. There's another reason why I should do this. Maybe controversial today, but it wasn't to these folks. Okay? And there's a guy who, he's kind of the Mr. Potter story here. Right? Mr. Potter, I don't know if you're familiar with the story, but he's the guy, while drinking, he accepted a sum of money from a bitterly hated business rival, giving him no receipt for it. He subsequently denied having received the money and used the incident as a basis for discrediting the man. He thus used his own wrongdoing as a means of destroying the reputation of another. In fact, his rival was ruined. He felt that he had done a wrong he could not possibly make right. Now that's very interesting. Right? This guy's talking about gossip. This guy's talking about slander. This guy's talking about character assassination. If I were to list my harms caused, my sins against humanity, I would have probably said that gossip and slander are kind of lower on the list based upon some of the things that I had done. According to this guy, and I understand why, he's saying he felt that it was a wrong that he could not possibly make right. Because that one is a real difficult one to make. Right? Mm-hmm. I go trash your name around town. You know, it's a lot more difficult to get you your reputation back after I've slammed it. Right? Mm-hmm. And I'm the guy who's mocked, mimicked, and made fun of everybody from the age of 6. I stereotyped everyone. I've told as many, I've perpetuated as many stereotypical jokes about people of races, creeds, colors, children, sexual identity, gender, religion, you name it. Even the ones that may have looked like me. I made fun of everybody. And I put everybody in a hole. This guy's saying, that might be a wrong. You may not be able to possibly make right. But we're going to get to the reason why I should do this. A little bit further down the page, he says, at the conclusion, it was better to take those risks than to stand before his creator guilty of such ruinous slander. Whoa. Dude, now they're not even talking about alcohol at all. They're talking about my relationship with God and how I stand with that power. And depending on where your concept of God is and everything like that, could mean in this life, could mean in the next life, could mean eternity. I don't know. But I'll tell you, our founders make a pretty bold statement as to why I may want to do this, right? I don't want to stand guilty before my Creator. Makes it very clear. I love this line, too, because I talked about it last week. Most of my issues all come around with me not being properly esteemed. I'm not properly esteemed with God and His children. Right off the bat, Creator. Boom. Speck of sand, you're small, Creator, I made you, right? Standing before my Creator, guilty of ruinous slander. So, it's also telling me a little something interesting about just the way what I perceive as the small things that I had done wrong on my harms caused. It's kind of interesting what the abuse and the verbal abuse or the lies and the distance and everything else that I had done to cause distance with others, right? So that's another reason why I want to do it, right? I want to have a good relationship with my Creator, and I want to stand clean and clear with my Creator whenever time He asks me to stand for Him or with Him, or whatever that looks like, if it happens. But it's kind of an interesting statement from our founders. Like I said, I know maybe a little bit controversial today, but it's in the book. Something to think about. Mm-hmm. Here's what's not to do. Page 82 says in the middle of the page, sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober.
Oh, thank you.
Right? We hear an alcoholic say that sometimes the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Right? Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But yet, he is a long way from making good to the wife, to the parents, for whom years he has so shockingly treated, passing all understanding, is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. I have that line highlighted in my book. the patience of my mother, the patience of the women that stood with me. Oh, gosh. In some respects, I wish they had left and not had some of that patience, because I may have not caused them so much harm. Had it not been so for the patience of our wives and mothers and family members and children and cousins and grandparents and bosses and friends, had it not been so, many of us would have no homes today and would perhaps be dead. And I'm going to just say, well, I'm sober. You know, mom doesn't need anything from me. Right? What do they say? I'm going to make a living amends. Right? I'm going to make a living amends. I don't need to stand in front of my father and tell him, you know, about the lies and this other stuff. You know, I'm going to be sober. You know, I'm going to take out the garbage. You know, I'm going to, you know, rake the leaves. You know, I'm going to show up for dinner. Right? What a gift. Right? What a gift he gets from me lying and cheating and judging him for 36 plus years. What a gift. Oh yeah, you know, that's how I make things right. That's just me practicing these principles in all of my affairs. Can I put this in there?
Yeah.
That's just me practicing these principles in all of my affairs. That is not making direct amends wherever possible. Right? Direct amends, face to face, mano a mano. Right? Man to man, woman to woman, person to person. Right? Entity to entity, whatever it may be. Because I've caused harms to entities too. Not that I'm a big entity. Right? But it says on page 83, a remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fit the bill at all. Right? Yeah, I'm sorry. You know? We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, meaning having right inventory, seeing the truth about my part in all of this stuff, and maybe just a small part of it, because now they're going to tell me how they see it, right? And being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family. Right? Face to face. Right? Now, not when I walk in here, if this is your first day of recovery, or if this is your 30th day of recovery, or 100th day of recovery, if you haven't done, you know, the fourth step and the fifth step and stuff like that, this is not asking you, I'm not asking you to go out now and start making amends. Right? Get a sponsor, go through this process, see some truth about yourself, get direction from that sponsor, and do as they say. Ask each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. You know, dear God, please help me to do the right thing no matter what my personal consequences may be. Work with prayer, work with a sponsor, work with people who have experience with these particular types of amends, and do it. It's, you know, just a, you know, I'm sorry, is not enough. Mm-hmm. That's not what amends is. Also, amends is not about, it's about forgiveness, right? But it's not about me getting forgiveness. I asked for forgiveness in step 5. I asked my Creator for forgiveness in step 5. This is much more about me forgiving others too, right? When I finished my 5th step with my first sponsor, and it, you know, he had a way of doing it. He could only do it certain chunks of time, you know, pieces at a time. So he would tell me on the ride home, you know, whoever you just talked about, you know, mom, dad, you know, sister-in-law, mother-in-law, whatever. He would just say, "Thank God for the power to forgive. Thank God for the power to forgive mom. Thank God for the power to forgive dad. Thank God for the power to forgive sister-in-law, mother-in-law. Thank God for the power to forgive me." You know, whatever, whoever was the topic of that particular day, thank God for the power to forgive. The thing that we had read a little bit earlier, or that I read a little bit earlier, talks about me making right with my opponent, with my enemy. It doesn't talk about, you know, because they talk about, what about the man you hate? Mm. Right? It talks about that. And it says very clearly, we admit our ill feeling and our regret. We give them dignity back. This isn't about me getting something back. This is just about me fitting myself to be of maximum service to God and his children. This is to allow me to be fit for that sponsee who comes up and says, I got creditor issues, I got wife issues, I got relationship issues. How do I make this amends? Well, I'm going to tell you how I did it. Right? Fitting myself to be of maximum service to God. You know, it's... yeah, that's the deal here. Right? So, I'm one of the guys in AA that usually when people say, you know, I'm making living amends, I kind of get a little creak. I get a little feel uncomfortable in my chair. But then again, I don't know exactly what they mean, right? And I don't need to get into the debating society within myself because I just want to go home, you know, and like kick the TV or something like that. So, instead, she's like, okay, well, maybe he made direct amends too, and he's also making living amends, practicing these principles in all of his affairs. But I've definitely heard people, friends of mine, very good friends of mine, who have said, no, I'm making living amends to my dad.
Right.
You know, I'm making living amends to the state of New Jersey. Mm. Guess what? That friend of mine, very good friend, love him to death, drank. Mm. Had a lot more hell on earth in front of him. And I see so many people go out due to unfinished amends. And that may be my truth too. Yeah. That might be mine too. You know, if I don't clear up all of the wreckage of my past and do all my utmost to make these things right, and if I do it, you know, willingly, knowingly and everything else, you know, that may be my fate as well. I need God. So that's what's not to do, right? We have what to do. We know what not to do, and it's about forgiveness, right? Remember, Shakespeare says it, and I'm not opposing nor supporting any cause. It's just the person who said it. He actually quoted somebody else, right? In his the line is, "The measure by which we measure, we shall be measured." So, the stick, you know, that I hold against you, right? That my lack of forgiveness towards you is the lack of forgiveness that I receive in return. May not be one-on-one, may be a societal thing, may be a spiritual thing, or anything like that. But the measuring stick which I use to judge everybody else, if I'm living by eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, nothing wrong with that philosophy. I'm just saying if I'm living along that, like, I need to get this back for that and all this other stuff, you know, I'm in bad shape. You know, there's a spiritual principle that talks about turning the other cheek. There's a spiritual principle that says if the guy takes your cloak, give him your tunic, right? If he takes, you know, if he takes your keys, give him your house. Like, that's where I need to be with society in many respects. If I'm still spending time out here looking for retribution, the measure by which I measure, I shall be measured. And I might just stand in front of my Creator with that same stick on me in some of these meetings, towards me, to me. And some people... it'll come. Right? Yeah. Oh, some people say at the end of these meetings, right, a certain prayer. And the end of the prayer goes something like this. And I've done a lot of, you know, I had a sponsor who told me to meditate on this prayer. I had a sponsor who, I've had all sorts of spiritual teachers have me do work with this particular prayer that we say at our home group. And I've heard people who are mentioned, who our forefathers read a lot about, this person's books. I've heard his talks and his readings about this particular prayer. And I've had to use this so that I could come clean with society. But it says, "Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. The measure by which I measure, I shall be measured." And so, for me, from my experience, this ninth step is also about me forgiving them. They've done stuff to me. Sometimes people have done stuff to me that is much worse than anything I've done to them. For sure. You may have that experience too. You may have that experience too, but we still have to make that amends for this thing. We still have to make things right for this thing. And what is an amends? The way I see it, the way it's one of the lines I use when I have to ask the question, how can I make this right with you? And people are usually very uncomfortable about that. Well, some aren't, but some are. And I go like this. I go, well, the way I see it, the balance of scales of life, the scales of life are out of balance. Right? You know, there's these things that have happened between us. And right now, I'd like to make things even. I'd like to make things straight with you somehow. Anyway, let me know what I can do to make these scales off. The way I see it, you've been cheated some. I want to get you back some. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's easy, money for money. But, you know, I may have stolen your integrity. Right? I may have stolen your good name. Right? Some people are like, you know, what do I do about, like, you know, like, oh, you really want me to make amends for that thing I did when I was 9 years old? I mean, that's kind of stupid, right? I mean, they don't really remember that, right? Well, I'm going to give you an example about that. This is a real-life example. Forgive me for any family members that are going to hear this online. I doubt it, but if they did, forgive me in advance. But I told my mother at 9 years old, I hate you. I told my father when I was 9 years old, I hate him. At the age of 38 or whatever it was, or 39, like, my mother took a while. She didn't want to hear from me about this stuff. She didn't want to hear about amends. She didn't want to sit down and have this talk with me. But when eventually that time had come, I said, Ma, you know, when I was 9, you know, I said I hated you. She's like, damn right you did. You know what I mean? Like, my mother hadn't forgotten it. Mm-hmm. That her little 9-year-old boy said, I hate you. Mm. She held on to that for, you know, 39 years. Mm. How am I to know how it affects you? I have no idea. I say it to my dad, and I said a lot of other stuff, Dad. I lied about this. The drugs were mine. That arrest, I told you, was hers. It was me. You know, all this stuff. You know, I come clean my dad. Like, you know, I did this to your dad. I ripped up this. I didn't come home. I started playing these games. My dad's like, I don't remember half of it. You know. But I don't know. I have no idea of what that looks like. I'm not supposed to know. God revealed to me a list. Then he revealed to me what those harms are. I'm here to have, as it says somewhere in here, tact and common sense, which is a guiding principle for me moving forward on how to make these things right, how to make these amends, right? But, I want to say it carefully. Or if I feel like it's going to cause some harm, I may allude to, you know, when I was 9, I was a little rough. Right. If I feel like if I'm going to bring that up again, it may hurt her or something like that. There may be a way to kind of float the ball in the air and see if she wants to or he wants to kind of roll with it. You know, there is a way, God bless you, to have tact and common sense about how to approach these things. And it's definitely the guiding principle of my current sponsor. Tact and common sense, especially with me. Tact and common sense all the way through. Because, like, I'm the guy who wants to fully reveal everything. Right? And I still am that guy, but I have to use tact and common sense. I have to have some sort of awareness, and you know, it does say on page 82, perhaps there are some cases where the utmost frankness is demanded. I know that there's other 12-step programs, other fellowships up there that stick very closely with this, and they and their families are healed. And they are free of that addiction. And so it may be a worthwhile discussion with your sponsor if you need to, in certain cases, to have the utmost frankness with about everything so that you can be clear moving forward. Both people are hurting. She knows I paid attention to her. She knows I paid attention to this. I even used her name to hurt your feelings and these other things. Am I going to now run away from it by saying what? By not talking about it? Well, it's there. It's out in the open. How far I go and stuff like that, tact and common sense. I pray before every amends, dear God, please give me tact and common sense. Show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. And I have to pray a lot. So forgiveness, and my list goes like this. Like I said, I've done quite a few inventories. I have hundreds from my first inventory, hundreds from my second inventory, hundreds from my third inventory, and then I have things that come up on a daily basis. Some that I make apologies for, some that I owe amends for. Direct, man-on-man, one-on-one relations. And I think I told you, you know, that one of my fears was not being loved for who I am. That I wasn't going to find somebody who's going to love me with when they find out the truth about my past. For all the things that I had done, for all the ways I behaved in my relationships, you know, for my drinking, you know, for all the other things that I do that affect my sobriety, for all the way that my off-balance nature with women, with friends, with children, everybody like that. And, you know, that's a serious fear that I had written in my fourth step that I think I had told you about. You know, no one's going to love this alcoholic. No one's going to love this sick, twisted character. If you only knew what I did in my bedroom on my iPad. You know, forget about even what I did in the past. Forget about the clubs and the gutter and New York City and all the other things that I've done. Forget about that stuff. It's even some of the stuff that I even, you know, battle with today. You're not going to love me. And it had come clear that, you know, I'd owed my grandmother an amends. It had come clear to me that she did nothing but love me my whole life, that she was just nothing but, I mean, maybe it'd been her favorite, as some people had said. And but I judged her upon my other grandparent as like being cold and distant and unfeeling, you know, lacking affection, these other things. And truth is, you hear it over and over again. You know, she did the best that she could, and, you know, we start to follow my family history. There's a lot of cold, distance, unloving, unaffectionate stuff that goes on, and this is just what was passed down to her, passed down, you know, to others in the family, you know. My sister-in-law calls it the Finley curse. And she had passed away while I was drinking. And I went to this place, 8-step stuff. There's a place called Gravefinder, gravefinder.com. Mm-hmm. Actually helps you find graves. And and I used to live my whole life being like this, like, I don't get it. Like, my brother's, like, well-adjusted. And here he is. He's got three well-adjusted children. Like, I don't get it. He's, like, you know, he's got the affection and the love with his wife. Like, they seem like a normal... Like, my brother's got the Keatons. Right? My brother's kind of got that. Right? How can this be? Same two kids, same DNA, whatever. How the hell... You know, he's like, all right, and I'm like so twisted. I'm like, who is like me in this family? I don't get it. Who am I like? I just didn't get it. Who am I like in this family? And when I go sit down at my grandmother's gravesite, Orange, New Jersey, and something unexpected happens. I'm sitting down with my grandmother, and I'm telling her, you know, I treated you like this. I talked about you like that. I did this with you. And I'm just, you know, I called them up. I let them know I was coming. You know, I let them know that, you know, the grave people, that I was going to be their cemetery, all this stuff. And I'm you know, just kneeling and sitting in front of grandma and having a talk. And as this goes on, as I'm talking to her, right next to her is my grandfather, who I did not expect to see. Mm. See, my dad's dad, I never met. He died before I was born, and he was possibly, most likely, an alcoholic, right? Who was abusive, f- physically abusive and these other things like that. From what I heard from the stories of not my dad, but from others in the family, you know, he was the type of guy that he was a bartender by trade, during the Depression. And, he'd spend one part of the day on one side of the bar and then spend the other part of the day on the other side of the bar. And my dad, you know, would have to sometimes jump on a trolley to go get dad. And as I'm sitting there, and I'm sitting in front of this grave, and I'm talking to this woman about, like, the things that I've done, and she's distant and cold and all this other stuff, I realized something. That she had given to an alcoholic like me complete love for who he was. For all of the sick and twisted things that were going on in his life, for all the sicknesses in his life, she loved him unconditionally. She loved an alcoholic just like me. And it was something that, like, it was like a vision of a person, you know, in a way that I'd never seen before, never would have imagined to be before, never would have imagined happening in my life. And it was like God also telling me, you can have it too. There are people like that. You know, they will, you know, your grandmother did it to your grandfather. And I had a whole new love and appreciation for this woman that I didn't, you know, think I'd have before. There are ways to make amends to people, like it says, that you can't see. Mm. You know? I told you I held every stereotype known to man against everybody. So it became clear to me that I owe amends to the African-American community, to the Jewish community, to women, all of them in general, the entire gender of women, because I've had all sorts of crazy views, or if I didn't have the views, I talked like that, and just sending one negative ripple out there to keep affecting who the hell knows and how much, but it came clear to me that I owe amends to women, to the LGBT community, to the Puerto Rican community, Polish community, like, all, you name it, you know. And so, at one point in time, you know, I'm in this relationship. I thought for sure she's the one sent from God. This is the deal. She's the one. Spiritual connection, the same, right? You know, ideas of God, same. Prayed with her, all sorts of stuff. I mean, we were really, like, close. Talked about some of the sexual stuff. You know, I talked to her about, you know, the kinks and the different things about me that are, you know, that I'm afraid she's not going to like. It's okay, it's not an issue, whatever. You know, we really seem to be getting along really great. We're really starting to move down this road, path together. I'm thinking, you know, I'm proposing sometime in the near future. The whole deal, like, I really believed this was it. And I felt all sorts of signs that this was what was going to happen in my life. And suddenly, the relationship ended. And I'm bawling like a baby. I'm bawling. And I'm like, you know, 10-stepping with my sponsor, you know, self-pity, this, that, the other thing. I'm crying. Like, I mean, I can't stop crying. I'm crying all the time over this thing. And my sponsor's really cool. He just goes, make amends. Right? Make amends. That's it. Doesn't take my phone call. Doesn't want to have a big discussion about anything. Make amends. Right? So, you know, I worked with a gay guy, and I said, you know, and he knew what I was doing and stuff. How do I make amends to these people and whatever? And long story short, I prayed. I go to one call, I make another call. I find myself at this place in New York City, the LGBT Center on 13th Street. And they happen to have a club, a society there called the Zappalordi Society, and it's named after a guy who may have been gay and was beaten to death in Staten Island. His name was Zappalordi. And these people were people that had been abused because of their sexual desires, their sexual identity, things they had done by family members, by people like me, and whatnot. And it was just a group of, you know, damaged people. And so I'm thinking that I'm going there to go help some damaged people get healed, right? Get, you know, get something back. And but I'm doing it crying. I am bawling the entire way. I'm so self-centered. There is nothing about prayer and meditation and being whole Joe Holy Roller over here in AA. Like, I'm going over, I did my meditation, I'm heading in. Like, I am crying the whole way. I call a guy, you know, he says, you know, ask God, whatever, take him with you, all this other stuff. And I don't even know how I'm going to do it, right? I don't even know how I'm going to do it. And I go in there, and these people, like, you know, they have, I mean, some of them, their mouths are dry because of the medications that they're on and everything like that. One guy talks about how his, because he's Puerto Rican in the Spanish community, you know, his family beat, his father beat him the crap out of him and sent him out, you know, on the streets and all these other things. Some of these people have sex addiction. Some of these people have drug addiction. Some of these people are alcoholics. It's like kind of amazing that I'm following, hanging out in this, you know, with these group of people. And here I go, you know, here, 12-step recovery, you know, it's made clear to me, the LGBT communities on my list, here are the harms that I'm aware of. And I list them. You know, I list them for what they are and the truth about them. And I also go, you know, this is based upon my fear. This is based upon, you know, my insecurity. This is based upon, you know, because of my fear and my insecurity, I did this to people in the community. Because of my fear and insecurity, I did this. Because of my self-centeredness, I did this. I said this. I even treated specific people like this. And the specific people I have to make direct amends to, but I use them also because it's just a microcosm of the whole thing. And so they hear me out, you know. And one goes like, you know, Michael, you know, you may have forgiven the community for some of the things that you've done, they've done to you, right? Because they started talking about stuff that they've done, right? You may have forgiven the community for some stuff that they've done to you. He says, you know, but have you forgiven yourself? And then you know, this other one goes like, Michael, you know, you know, you're coming here, you're loving me, you're loving us all, you're loving the people out there, you're going out and you're making things right with society, you're doing all these great things, but do you love yourself? I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And then this says, I'm like, you know, boom, 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 do you love yourself? And I'm like, what the hell's going on here? Like, boom, like, you love yourself? Like, and then all of a sudden, it's like, it's as if they know I just had a breakup, you know what I mean? And all this other stuff, and I got to love myself first. And you, Mike, you got to love yourself first before you can truly love somebody else and all this other stuff. And I'm like, whoa, you know? I'm walking out of there with a notebook. Like, you know, this is what, you know, like, I'm now being given spiritual tools, spiritual suggestions to go out now and work with from this amends. Mm-hmm. You know, they told me what I could do to make it right. Have some friends in the community, mm-hmm. right? They've told me, you know, come join me on the pier, right? Which is something, you know, special for those folks, you know, whatever, you know. And what I wound up doing is I wound up attending that meeting every Saturday for the next, like, year and a half or so until my job started giving me these hours where I couldn't do it anymore. And I wound up making a friend in that community, right? That, you know, she invites me over for her birthday. I take her to Yankee Stadium, right? And I'm not doing some sort of charitable cause. This is my friend. It's somebody who, you know, confides in me and you know, I can in them. You know, we talk about what's going on in her life. She's troubled. She's got her stuff. I'm not there to heal her. We're friends. That's what has come of it. And I'm not doing it out of obligation. This is just what has how it's been. And so, but, you know, I'm like walking around, like, you know, I'm leave this amends, and I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? Like, you know, like, you know, how do you love yourself? You know, yeah, of course I love myself. You know what I mean? Yeah, I know how to love myself. What are they talking about? You know, right? You know how to do that, right? Yeah. And then I wind up talking to this woman, like, with 20 years, who, you know, I'm not even sure about her brand of recovery necessarily. You know, I don't know what her sponsorship lineage is and all this other stuff. I just have this late night conversation with her, and I'm like, you know, how do I do this? You know, I tell her about this experience, like, how do you love yourself? And she goes, you know, Michael, you know the patience, love, and tolerance that you're supposed to give other people? Yeah. You know, yeah, I'm aware of that. You know that we have to go out and do these things for others. We have to be forgiving of others for what they do and these other things. You have to accept them for their shortcomings. You have to accept them for who they are and whatever. I go, yeah. Well, she says, you need the same love, patience, and tolerance towards yourself. I was like, whoa. You know? because I'm the guy who, you know, fourth column, big and long, you're such a scum, you know, all this other stuff. And she's giving me the answer and the keys on how to love myself. And also, too, what's going on while I'm making this amends is, like, you know, I'm realizing that these people, you know, are in fear and they have their issues, you know, based upon, in some cases, the way society views their sexual desires. And as I'm talking about the things to these people, I'm realizing I'm in fear of the same stuff. Mm. I'm afraid about what society thinks of what goes on in my bedroom. I'm afraid of what society really knew what was going on, you know, underneath my sheets, or while the lights are on or off or whatever, or, you know. And I realized, like, I suffer from the same fear. I suffer from the same stuff. Like, I knew I suffered from that, but all of a sudden I'm like, I'm with you. Like, I get it. And going to those meetings and whatnot, you know, sometimes I'd share some stuff that was here, sometimes I'd share some other stuff. But something had come. And you may ask yourself, well, do I really need to make amends to the African American community? I don't know if you do. I did. Mm-hmm. Right? I do. Right? You know, and you know, it's funny how God works. My first relationship was with a black woman. Mm-hmm. Sober, right? Was with a black girl. My first sponsee was a gay guy. My last relationship was a Polish woman from Poland, right? God has a funny way of working these things into my life. I've had an Orthodox Jewish person be my sponsee. Like, and they're asking me. Like, I'm not like, you know, you need a sponsor, better grab. No, they're asking me. It's like, God, you're amazing how God works. And so I know time. It's a few, but, you know, I write letters to my congressman. I've written letters to the Republican Party. I've written letters to the Democrat Party. I've written letters to senators. I've written letters to, you know, the atheists of America, whatnot. Like, I've written letters to baseball players. Okay. Because, and in the old Yankee Stadium, right, you used to, like, if you could sit in the front of the third, you know, of the upper tier, you would sit in that old, you know, front row, you could shout down at Cal Ripken and tell him everything you think about him, right? And you knew he heard it. Like, he heard it. And there was a part of me that was so, like, contrived in my head that, you know, by me beating him up day after day after day all this time, because I went to 25 games a year, 18 games against the Yankees, and I'm slamming this guy, whatever. I used to go around and tell people, Cal Ripken retired because of me. Because I'd be like, you washed up, son of a bank. You know, all this other stuff. Guess who got a letter? You know? Guess who got a thank you note? Not from him, but from the organization. Mm-hmm. You know? And I've donated money to that organization that he holds up. You know, they're not, you know, asking me for more money, whatever. I ask them how I can make things right. They send me a thank you letter. Sometimes I'll send something back or whatever. I'm on their list, right? It's God's little way of sometimes showing me, like, yeah, I'm listening. They heard it. It's well done. And so my dad, I told you about that, right? You know, probably at least, I don't know, anywhere from $7,000 to $11,000 in debt to my father. For bailing me out of this job, jam, this lawyer and this thing. Didn't ask for them. He did it, but he put it out. And, you know, he's a guy who's in financial jam himself now. And, you know, I said to my father, I said, what can I do to make these things right, you know? And, you know, he asked me this. He said, hey, Michael, you wrote these things down. You know, you're aware of all the things that you've done. Yeah. He said, you know, you talked to someone about it, and he meant, like, somebody of a particular faith. You know, you talk to this person and you tell them all the things that you've done. Yeah. Did you tell God the things that you've done and that you're sorry for them? I said, Dad, yeah, I did. He says, well, I can tell you right now, God forgets about him. God has forgotten about him already. Mm-hmm. And he says to you, says to me, and son, I forgot about them too. I forget about him too. It's gone. Mm-hmm. And you know, the book tells me, or somebody told me, you know, after I make this thing, I go out and I, you know, thank God for the experience, and I sit with some time in prayer and thanksgiving for the experience I had. And I didn't leave my father feeling floating on air. I didn't leave my father like, you know, like harps, angels playing the harps or any of this other stuff, you know, which I kind of expect sometimes when I do these things because I think I'm crazy. And I didn't get any of that stuff. What happened was I went to this place and I prayed for a while with God as I understood him. I came back to my dad's house. And I came upstairs into the kitchen. My dad's watching the Yankees game. And as I came up the stairs to come into the room with my father, for the first time in my life, I looked my father in the eyes. And I knew from that day on that I could tell my father anything. No matter how crazy, no matter how sick or twisted it is, no matter what kind of jam or trouble I get into, I can tell my father the truth. Not only that, I can look in the mirror and tell myself the truth and be okay with him. Because I came here to be a gentleman. I came here to be a man. And the only way that I do that is with the strength and power of God to sit in front of one man and tell him the actual truth about what I've done and where I think it has maybe come from. And if that's, you know, the sensible thing to do in these cases. And the only thing I'll say about living amends in this regard is, you know, as the result of me actually doing the one-on-one, face-to-face stuff, I am definitely much less apt to call her names again. I'm much more less apt to raise my voice again. I'm much less apt to start being abusive. I'm much less apt to talk about you behind your back or assassinate your character or all these other things. And also, because I've sat down and I did do this thing one-on-one, I kind of know that when these thoughts and these other things come running through my head, I may have to do it again. You know, and I don't want to stand in front of my Creator, you know, with this understanding that I haven't made changes and I haven't made good with the gifts that he has given me, that I haven't made good with the mission that he has put me on, that I'm not fitting myself to be of maximum service to God and his children. And this step, as the result of me making amends, as a result of me banging down doors, my defects of character slip away. I don't work on them. It's not the way it's been. My experience is that when I do this humbling process, not humbling because I'm a humble guy, humbling because the process itself requires it, I find myself gaining virtue. And there's more to come next week.
Okay. Thank you.